Hello, and welcome to Our Planet Sings on CFRU 93.3 FM. My name is Rob Dixon, and I'll be talking to you today about environmental issues and the value of artistic and emotional accounts of nature. Up next is the world of vermicomposting with Jocelyn Kelly.
The world of vermicomposting from small to mega scale. This was a workshop presented by Kathy Nesbitt on Sunday, February 3rd, during the 32nd annual Guelph Organic Conference and Expo that ran from January 31st to February 3rd of this year. The workshop was an hour and a half in duration, so we aired the first 30 minutes on February 15th. If you missed that and would like to hear it, you can get it online at cfru.ca. The second 30-minute segment you'll hear in just a moment, and then the last 30 minutes of the workshop will be aired on March 8th between 9 and 10. So Kathy Nesbitt is a worm advocate and founder of Kathy's Crawly Composters. This is an environmental business established in 2002 that specializes in vermicomposting. In other words, that means composting using worms. And also, she's involved in organic diversion. Kathy has been involved in numerous collection and composting research projects and has diverted several tons of organic material from landfills. So I hope you enjoy this workshop.
If you're doing this in a bin in your house or in your class or in your business, you would have, like any container will do, it's creating the right carbon nitrogen. So you start with the, even though they're eating, the worms are eating both the bedding and the food that you're adding in, you start with your bin about half full of moist bedding, and then you're burying your food in the bedding. And then you're adding additional carbon material, paper, whatever you're using, on an ongoing basis, but you start with your bin about half full so that you've already got lots of bedding material. In an outdoor system or a larger scale system, it's going to be a bit of a different system, because you can actually blend everything together. If you don't care about fruit flies, then it doesn't matter. They really do coexist quite nicely, because the fruit flies are decomposers, so they're breaking down the material for the worms, but they just bug us if they're in the house. That's all. They get in your wine. If you drink wine, that is. any is that okay? Helpful? Yeah? Anybody else? Questions before?
I just wondered about that paper that's used for the printouts of your books, the library, and the printouts that you get at the grocery
store. Oh, receipts and stuff?
Receipts is slightly glossy, but it's not really, really glossy. Is it safe for worms, or is it
okay? I would say you could add them in. Again, you wouldn't want to have just one source of anything. I would say you want to diversify with all your materials. Those glossy things aren't going to be as nutritious or whatever, as good as the other materials. Thermal paper, yes. Yeah. Well, there are chemicals. The worms have an amazing capacity to clean the materials that they're consuming. So they can detoxify soil. They can do all kinds of magic things. Then the worms do become contaminated. It's true. They're your working animals. Did you have a question? No. Oh, you had that comment. Oh,
yeah,
behind. Sorry.
The chemicals in the paper.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Yes?
Do you know how they deal with dugongs from walnut? Do they break down
dugong? What are you saying?
Sorry, dugong is the toxin in walnut that makes them allotoxic.
Huh.
Walnut trees don't allow other things to grow around them. And it's a problem for gardeners, so I'm wondering if worms can break down the dugong.
That's a good question that I don't have an answer for. Yeah, sorry, I'm not sure about that one. And I haven't fed any walnut. I mean, you can put shells and nuts and stuff in your bin. They may go around a few times, you know, as they break down. Same with, you know, stems of pumpkins and stuff like that. You can absolutely add them in, but they're not going to be digested the first time around. So you may be adding them a few times.
Question.
Oh, question, yes.
Is there a concern for paper cuts when it comes to worms? I mean, they're these supple creatures and they're sticking.
Thank you. Beautiful. Thank you for the concern of the paper cut for the worms. Love that. Okay, that's a great question. I mean, and same with eggshells, right? Because eggshells are pretty, you know, you don't really need to pulverize your eggshells, although it does make it more accessible to the worms. So for paper cuts for the worms. So, no, it's not, definitely not an issue, because it's going to be moist for one thing. So it will soften the paper. But Worms have, they're called annelids, which means segmented creatures. So they don't get cut by the eggshells or rough surfaces. Each little segment is like a separate body component. So they have really, really strong bodies. Unlike slugs and snails that have, they're single-bodied creatures, so you can put eggshells in your garden, so the eggshells cut your snails or your slugs. That doesn't happen to worms. They can go over and not an issue. It's like a massage. Thank you for that. Yes?
A similar question. We feed our sheep Disectomix earth, DE,
yes,
for deworming purposes, which is obviously going to be found into the manure. We use DE because it literally cuts apart the parasites. So would that have the same effect on the worms?
No. Diatomaceous earth, that it's going to give them grit. That's going to help them to process their food.
So it's not going to harm them like it does the internal parasites?
No. I don't believe so. Yes?
That brings another question to my mind. What about if you're bringing in some manure to add some nitrogen to your pile? I suppose you'd have to be careful that they haven't been dewormed or medication of that sort been used on them.
Right. Okay. So with horses, I guess other animals are dewormed as well. With deworming medication, it is to kill the worms. So that manure, you want to make sure that it's leached out so that that it's aged a little bit, that it's been washed or whatever, so that the chemicals are leached out of the manure. You definitely want to be aware of the source. And on that note, I mean, I'm not at the manure part, but it doesn't really matter. I don't have an agenda. one sec, I'll get to you in a sec. I did a thing when I started my business. I was taking some manure from some fancy racehorses, highfalutin racehorses. And I didn't realize about the deworming medication. And I did kill all my worms. Yeah, I know. It's sad. It's okay. We're not going to stay down here. I'll bring you back up. Okay, so let's move along here, if everybody's okay. Oh, yeah, they're hermaphrodites. I said that already. Look at that. Oh, and so there are the worm eggs. I don't know. Can you... Oh, yes, question?
Oh, yeah, I just wanted... for grit, I've been giving my home worms... I haven't tried it at the barn yet, but I've been giving them the bird gravel, the budgie gravel that my birds get.
Okay.
And I was just wondering if you've heard anything about that, how people found that to work, or, have had success with it.
I've never tried bird gravel. Anybody tried bird gravel? Gravel? No. I think that should be fine, because you can add sand in for grit, but sand doesn't have microorganisms. So if you're adding the sand for the grit, that's fine. You still need to add something that has microbes in it, some soil or compost or something. So if you've got compost, there may not be a lot of grit in there. So adding compost and sand is a nice combination. I would say that that's completely fine.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's fine. Yeah. So the worms are prolific breeders, as I mentioned earlier. This is a picture of the worm eggs. The lighter ones in color are the fresher eggs, and the ones that are darker are ready to hatch. So
you pick them out?
Do I pick them out? No. No, this was just, I do a lot of workshops, so I like showing the eggs. Because I do a lot of talks at even garden clubs, and when I show the eggs, people will say to me, oh, first of all, people don't realize that worms lay eggs. You don't really think about the reproduction cycle of a worm very often. And when I show the eggs, people will say to me, oh, those are worm eggs. Oh, I thought they were bug eggs, and I was squishing them in the garden. No, stop it, So what we don't know, and that's harmful. So that's why I think it's really important that I show the eggs. Do I pick out the eggs? No. When we're selling a pound of worms, or when we sell worms, there's eggs in there, and they're bed run. We sell worms that are bed run, meaning that they're all different sizes. And when you're buying worms, that's what you want, because then they're all in different stages of their life cycle. So you've got the adults, the mature worms, the teens, the babies, and then the eggs that are going to be the new generation. And the babies are much more adaptable than the adults, just like life. Okay, so this is for those that want more information about the fabulous biology of a worm. This is actually a night crawler. You see the tail end is shovel shaped. So this helps it to dig in the soil and also helps it to grab on. They have little hairs on their body called setae, which helps them to move in the soil and also helps them when a robin is trying to eat them. They can grab on and it's their last-ditch effort. So, you know, they do have a quite a complex little body there. Fabulous little system. Funny that that one showed up.
Just to say where the five hearts are, so if you can go one half.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway. Oh, I could go back, couldn't I? Ha! Look at that. I learned something new today. So fun. So so all of their hearts, people often ask me about cutting a worm in half. You know, the kids will say, oh, did you know you can cut a worm in half and have two worms or, you know, something along that line. And that's not true. What happens is they do have nerve endings through their whole body. Their all of their hearts and all of their critical organs are between the swollen band, the clitellum, and the head. So if a worm is cut in half, there's nerve endings through the whole body. So when it's cut in half, it keeps on moving. Or if you use the worms for bait, when you cut them, both pieces will wiggle. And that's, you know, well, attractive for the fish, first of all. And otherwise, you might as well use a shoelace. so they'll wiggle around for a little while, and then they'll stop wiggling around the piece that doesn't have the head. You know, and people will say to me, oh, well, they just grow another head. No, it's nature. How could they just grow another head? Like, wouldn't that be cool? I'd like another head. might help me. I don't know why. It's the carrot juice. sorry for those that are more serious. Okay, so cutting them in half. Yeah, don't cut them in half. Just don't do that. Yeah, it's mean. That's right.
Sirius is a large star in the constellation Canis Major.
I'm not sure what that means, but okay. But thank you for that.
Sirius right here, right
now. Oh, right. Do I need to press it again? Is that?
I think so.
Oh, there we go. Okay. So setting up your worm bin. So how much soil? So again, any container will do. This one's quite attractive, though, with my company name, I think. and that's when you know you're in business, you know, when you have to order 500 units. And you're like, oh my gosh, are people going to buy 500 units? Not yet. so you need some kind of carbon nitrogen, as I said. So leaves, straw, paper, the soil. So the amount of soil that you're adding, the red wigglers are not soil dwellers. So you're adding the soil because they don't have teeth and they require the microorganisms and grit to break down the food. So about a liter of soil in a container this size. And this container is about the size of recycling bin or, you know, a tote or something. And any container will do. Actually, one of my first tower composters was an old dresser. So fun. And I loved having families would come over and have a tour. I have a kind of a compost demonstration site at my house, in my little two-bedroom house. Not in the house, but in the backyard. And I would tour people around. Oh, here's this one, and then the cinder block composter here. And then I'd get to the dresser, and I loved when they had little kids, and I'd say, so this is my favorite piece. And then the kids would be looking at it like, that's where you keep your clothes. Okay? So then I'd open the drawer, and wow, and they'd see all the worms in there and all the magic, and they'd be looking like, then I know the question was, where's her underwear? So I'd just say the worms ate it. yeah, the parents love me. Sorry, parents. So then eggshells or agricultural lime and water. So you want it the consistency of a wrung-out sponge. Worms are about 90% humidity or moisture, so they require a fairly moist environment, but they can't swim, so you don't want pools of water. They're not fish. if your water is chlorinated, you want to let it stand for about 24 hours. That will allow the chlorine to evaporate and also bring your water to room temperature. So that's going to be a little gentler for the worms. So that's just a small kit system thing. And worm food. So again, same photo as before, just the carbon nitrogen. And I have the carbon up there because when I started my business, I used to do house calls, people would call me up and say, you know, I didn't have enough customers and I had too much time. So people would say, hey, my worms aren't eating what you said they were going to eat. So I'd say, oh, well, I'll come and do a worm inspection of your bin. And so I'd go over there and, wow, fascinating. People would have like, you know, half a head of cabbage in there and a whole apple. And yeah, I mean, the smaller you chop up your scraps, the faster it breaks down, the more the worms can eat. And I would say that worms do actually eat their full weight every day. But I err on the side of caution and say half their weight because people don't consider the bedding food. So that's the only reason that I say that. They actually eat their full weight, but I say half their weight. Because if you have a pound of worms, you're looking at 3 to 4 pounds of food waste per week. And they're also eating the bedding. But if you think that the food is only the food, scraps, then you're adding in 7 pounds of food. Very quickly, the food, as it breaks down, the juice is going to be released, and then the oxygen will get squished out, and you very quickly will have anaerobic or smelly conditions. This should never smell like rotting food. If it smells like rotting food, it's rotting food and not composting. So that's your indication. And you can turn it around. The bacteria, the anaerobic bacteria, will become aerobic. It won't become. It just will die off. And the aerobic bacteria, meaning with oxygen, will take over and your system will be back in balance. Yes?
Is there any pros or cons to blending everything and then putting it in?
Like, wonderful. Thank you. Wonderful. So any pros or cons to blending your food? Blending your food is beautiful. It's a fabulous thing. Like if you have a juicer and the pulp from a juicer, oh my gosh, it's like pre-chewing the food for the worms. Fantastic. However, with caution, you want to have a balance or a combination of pureed stuff and bigger particle size so that you don't create the anaerobic conditions, right? So if you have just your slurry in there, then that could, again, squish out the oxygen. So you want to just be careful that you're not creating anaerobic conditions. But that's a beautiful thing to do.
You are tuned in to CFRU 93.3 FM and Our Planet Sings, a program that explores environmental issues such as challenges around the overproduction of organic waste. One solution offered by Kathy Nesbitt of Kathy's Crawley Composters is to compost organic material using worms. Her workshop, The World of Vermicomposting from Small to Mega Scale, was presented on Sunday, February 3rd as part of the 32nd annual Guelph Organic Conference and Expo. We will return to Kathy after The Bird and the Worm by Owl City.
If you're the bird, whenever we pretend it's summer, then I'm the worm. I know the part, it's such a bummer, but fair is fair. If my segments get separated, I'll scream, and you'll be there. Close your eyes, slide the cotton off of your shoulder, and feel the shine.
Feel the shine.
I'm hooked, so toss me over and cast the line. I'll throw a party and greet my undersea friends as they arrive. Question on my mind for all my pals who live in the oceans and the seas with friends like. And we're see that we were meant to be.
You've just heard The Bird and the Worm by Owl City. Now back to Kathy Nesbitt's Vermicomposting Workshop.
So these are just some different, I don't know why they're not all up there. Do I need to push it again?
Yeah, no.
Or just wait. Yes. Okay. Uh-huh.
You just threw a couple numbers out there, like a pound of worms could eat 3 to 4 pounds of food waste a week, is that?
Correct.
But that's excluding the bedding, so it's...
Right.
Okay.
That's right. Yes, correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so these are just some different worm habitats. So we talked about the... Oh, where's... I have a pointy thing. Look at that, how fun. So I thought it was a pen. Okay, so yeah, so we talked about this one already, any container. This is the worm chalet made right here in Ontario. And the chalet is beautiful. And I have one of these at my booth if you want to see a real one, live one. The beautiful part about the chalet, you're only working one tray at a time. So you start on the bottom tray. There's holes in the bottom of each tray. So same ingredients as your basic kit. You would have your bedding and your soil and eggshells and whatnot. Your worms would be in there. When the tray fills up, instead of having to separate the worms manually, you just set up the next tray, set that on top. There's holes in the bottom. The worms will follow the food, so they migrate up to the next level. You have to keep adding shredded paper to the tray below so that the worms can continue. The worms are going to reduce the volume. So if it's not touching the mesh, they can't get to the next level. So you do need to keep on adding stuff in. And then by the time you get to the third tray, so fun, your first tray is going to be finished. And then you just turn your roof upside down. This is a fabulous design. This is engineers. They just do such magic work. So you turn your roof upside down. The trays will stack right in the roof. So this is a fabulous system for anybody that lives in a condo and you don't have space to do, you know, a backyard or something to do the compost the harvest outside. This is a continuous flow system that you just keep on. You never have to stop feeding. So you just start working different trays at a time. And there's a tap at the bottom. So as the food breaks down, the nutrients, the juice is released, and in a single unit, you have to be careful that it doesn't get too wet. In the chalet or the tower composters, the excess moisture will drain down. You can siphon it off. If it doesn't smell bad, it's aerobic. You can dilute it and water your plants and have liquid fertilizer. If it smells bad, just discard that. It's anaerobic, without oxygen. It's got those... anaerobic bacteria in there. Plants always require aerobic bacteria to grow, so that would be detrimental to your plant growth. If you want to make the worm tea or the compost tea, I really suggest, you know, because people will look at the chalet and they go, oh yeah, I can get the compost tea, just with caution, because you don't want to use something that might be hazardous to your plants. What if you want to make the compost tea, just grab some of the castings and drop it in your watering jug, give it a stir, and then you have the liquid fertilizer. You can't store the compost tea in an airtight container because the bacteria will consume the oxygen and then you'll have anaerobic stuff to put on your plants. Not so good. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I guess could you drop an aerator or bubbler into it?
Absolutely.
And that would chase out the anaerobic bacteria?
Yeah, for sure. Yes, you could. If you have some anaerobic liquid and then you want to turn it aerobic? You could do that. But once you've got anaerobic compost or liquid, I believe you've always got some of those anaerobes in there. So it might be better just to have a fresh batch. This one down here was Glenn's before, but Rick changed the picture. Sorry, Glenn. Glenn Monroe, if you don't know Glenn, he's doing awesome stuff. And just a quick story about Glenn. Several years ago, he was in Nova Scotia. I hope you don't mind, Glenn. I was hired by a company to find 8,000 pounds of worms. It's not easy. I disrupted the whole worm industry in North America. Everybody wanted a piece of that. It was weird. I thought everybody was like me, you know, above board. But it's worms, right? We're below the soil. There's a really dark underbelly of the worm world. It's true. So anyway, I was hired to go and find these worms, and Glenn had a whole worm place out in Nova Scotia. So I went out there on a road trip with a gentleman who became, he was from India, he became a Canadian citizen one day, and the next day we went on a four-province road trip. I said, wow, good for you. That's a good way to become a Canadian, see the country. But he didn't drive. He just liked the listening to pop music, and he let me do all the driving, the big U-Haul. Anyway, that was fun. So Glenn was growing actually outside, to your question, in wood waste, wood pulp stuff, waste. Right?
Yeah.
Fabulous. That was awesome.
Partially composted.
And so what I say to people is whatever you have for your, as a waste product, that's what you use. The worms are adaptable. They'll convert different things. You just need to create the right balance of materials or the right ingredients, and the worms are going to be so happy there. So this system down at the bottom, this is at a school in Michigan. I don't know if anybody's heard of the book called Worms Eat My Garbage, Mary Appelhoff. Yeah.
The library couldn't have
on board for me. Yay. I sell it. Mary Appelhoff, because of her fabulous work, almost every school in Michigan has worms. Some schools have worms in every class, and some schools have outdoor insulated bins, and one school in particular has a project with the U of Michigan, and they have an outdoor insulated system that is solar powered. How super cool is that for the kids? How wonderful. Obviously, they produce more energy than they need for the worm bin because it's just to keep the frost off, but how fun. So this is just an outdoor one. This bin here is insulated with styrofoam on the inside. It goes year-round. There's two kind of compartments, although it's whole on the inside. So it's just that you feed one side, and then you feed the other side when that side is kind of full up. They had two different systems. Rick and I had a chance to go and visit Michigan and see their systems over there. So they had some that were buried in the ground. So they were 4 feet down, and they worked quite well as well, except when it came time to do the harvest. Yes, somebody did have to jump into the worm bin. Eesh. Whose job will that be? Yes. It's aerated by the worms. When you have worms in your compost, you don't really need to aerate. You don't need to do the turning.
Because like with the bins at home or, you know, in a place like the green barn, you have holes built in them, and I could see that there were no holes there.
Yes, but wood is porous. So if you're using plastic doesn't breathe, and there's not really very much evaporation. With a wooden system, then the wood does breathe, and you have to make sure that it stays moist enough if you're using a wooden bin. From my experience, in a wooden bin, you get a much finer cast. You get a really beautiful cast because it's drier. No, the styrofoam's on the inside. And then
it sealed tight, there was like gaps, little small gaps between the styrofoam, so it was able to breathe.
Oh. Yeah, there was some airflow. It's not tightly sealed because it's aerobic, so you need to have some kind of airflow. Yeah. Yes?
Is there any issue with the wood decomposing?
With the wood? Oh, the wood, I'm sorry. I love the way you say that. That's beautiful. The wood, yes, absolutely. Yeah, the wood is going to decompose over time. Yeah, so your system's not going to last forever. Yes, Glenn.
Just as to help answer that question.
Yeah, thank you.
Coming into the outdoor bins, what I do is I put a layer of playground gravel about 2 or 3 inches at the bottom, and then put on the bottom of the bin, and then put the floor over it with holes.
Oh, okay.
That allows for good drainage, and also then if you put some holes around the bottom, like the wood where the gravel is, the air can come in that way as well.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Mm-hmm.
But animals can't get in, which is another important thing. Right.
That, yes. Yeah, really, I mean, for larger scale systems, Glenn has tons of experience. And I think he would share some of his, he loves worms too. Yes.
I don't see any holes in your bin. Is that
Yes, there's holes in the top of my bin and there's holes in the bottom. Yeah, thank you. And then just over here, that's one of the earth machines. And so you can add worms to your outdoor composter as well. Not at this time. Spring, summer, and fall, you can add them in there. They turn, speed up the process, do the turning for you, create a finer product. And then in the fall, when they sense the temperature change, breed more than usual, deposit their eggs throughout, and then they hibernate. And as long as the thaw is gradual enough, the worms may survive. If it's a harsh winter freeze thaw, the worms may not survive, but the eggs will overwinter. So once you have worms, you likely always have worms. And then these... Yes?
Sorry. So for that manure bed that you had there...
Yep.
I saw the black...
Oh, cloth. I didn't talk about that.
No, you didn't. I saw the black plastic. So is that what... Is that manure bed normally covered by that black plastic?
Yes. That's landscape fabric, so it's porous. yes, it's covered. That manure pit, that was our second manure project. Our first manure project was done in sand. Guess what happened? Yeah, sand doesn't hold water. That was a sad day, too. Okay, no more sad stories. So, that one was at a dairy farm. I said I was afraid of worms. I was afraid of cows, too. Before, so I know, I was really short, now I'm really tall. One second. So I had heard that worms could reduce manure piles by up to 80% and reduce or eliminate gram-negative bacteria, E. coli, Salmonella, Shigella, things that cause trouble for us. So I went to a local dairy farm in Bradford and I said, I'm the worm farmer in town, and told him what I heard about manure and asked him if I could do a project. And just for your information, maybe you know already, but cows produce about 66 pounds of manure per day per cow. So there's really an unlimited supply. And so I said, hey, do you have some manure that I could do a project with and a space? So he said, yeah, you can do that spot over there. And it was surrounded by electrified fence. So I was like, wow, it's like a dream come true. I'm afraid of cows, so I'm protected from the cows. It's not great. Except what I didn't know as a city girl... Not that all city girls don't know this. when you put your foot on the field, they think it's milking time. So whenever I went there, yay, the cows would all be out in the field, and then I'd put my foot on the field. Oh, no. Oh, here they come. Oh, no, what are you looking at, you cows? And so that was great. I had this little spot there, except the watering trough that I used to water my bed was the trough that the cows used. So there they were, and I had to work my way around the cows. And they're huge. They're not really, they don't look like Dalmatians like they do when you're driving down the highway. Anyway, that was an interesting project. And so I had it covered just because I didn't want birds to be eating all my worms. That's why I had it covered. And sort of to keep some moisture in. You're welcome. So, sorry, was there a question? Oh, yes, thank you. You had a question.
I had a question about the outdoor bin at the school. Should it be out of, or any outdoor bin like that, should it be out of direct sunlight? Does that play a temperature, in the summertime, should it be positioned in a shadier spot so it's not being, rained on by sun?
Yeah, probably. If possible, again, not every school will have that option where they can put it in a spot that it's in the shade and optimum conditions. So you just create the conditions that you need. By having it covered and, insulated and whatnot. And was there somebody else that made a comment?
I just had to ask what you had
covered. Oh, I covered it with, it was just this black landscape fabric that's really porous. It was just really light, and that was just not that the birds couldn't peck through it, I guess. But they didn't. Okay, so these are larger systems. These here are the two on the left side. Are windrow style, and it's the same system. These are in North Carolina. So, again, they don't have the temperature that we have. They don't have the climate that we have. But how the windrows work is they were using manure. So they had put pipes underneath. I think the people are so creative in how they do what they do. They had water pipes underneath the beds. It was poured concrete foundation. And they had water pipes. Outside, they had a wood-burning stove, and the wood-burning stove would heat the water, which would heat the floor of the the worm bin, which would keep the worms going. Beautiful, fantastic. And they, again, they don't have minus whatever weather that we have. So they, so this building is not insulated, just has hydro, so it has lights. And so what they were doing here was just adding the material, then they would add extra material, the worms would kind of migrate along. So that's how that works. Then you do one side, and then they would continue on the other side. So you're just adding the material. There's different ways that you can do the manure management. You can either do it where you're, well, there's probably more than two ways. You add the material and the worms will kind of creep along, or you can add on top. But if you're using fresh manure, know that it's really hot, if you've ever seen those steaming patties. So you want to make sure not to cook your worms. If you're going to be adding fresh manure, just a small layer is all you're going to be adding. And then you can add that weekly, and then, you know, the worms will consume it and move their way up. Once it gets to about 3 feet high, then you would add start another pile beside, and then add your fresh stuff there, and then the worms will eventually migrate over to the next pile. It's not super fast, but, you know, if you've got time and space, that's a nice way to do it. Yes?
I just have a question about if you're using your manure for methane production, uh-huh. Can you use the leftover manure for the worms?
Absolutely. The question was, if you're using your manure for methane production, can you use the residual after you've got your methane? for the worms. Absolutely. Beautiful. That's fantastic. Yeah, that's a great use. And then this one here is a system that's in York Region. It's called a reactor. And how this one works, it's really just a big container. And then you add your material. So you layer your material up, and the worms are surface dwellers, so they're going to keep on eating up. And then there's a scraper that goes along the bottom, loosens up the castings, they fall through to the bottom because the worms are surface dwellers. So they're up here and your material's down here, and then you can rake off what you need or harvest some of the material. Then the whole system will move down, and then you just keep adding your material up.
You've been listening to The World of Vermicomposting from Small to Mega Scale on CFRU 93.3 FM. This was a workshop by Kathy Nesbitt recorded on Sunday, February 3rd. As part of the 32nd Annual Guelph Organic Conference and Expo. The last 30-minute segment of the workshop will be aired on Friday, March 8th, but if you missed the first 30 minutes, which aired on February 15th, you can hear it online at cfru.ca under Our Planet Sings. Also, if you'd like additional information on vermicomposting and Kathy's work, please take a look at our website, kathyscomposters.com.